Today is Friday, November 11th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Coming up, thousands turn out at protests across the United States of the election of Donald Trump as the next president. VOA's Catherine Gibson is here to talk about it. Also ahead, many, many questions yet to be answered about how Donald Trump will handle U.S. foreign policy.
This is a huge earthquake, a seismic shift of historical proportions.
That is VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent, Steve Herman. We'll hear from him and much more on today's International Edition. Even as U.S. President-elect Donald Trump softened his rhetoric as he met with President Obama at the White House yesterday, tens of thousands of people from New York to California filled the streets of large U.S. cities for a third day Thursday to demonstrate their dismay at Trump's election. Demonstrations occurred from Portland, Oregon, to Chicago, to New York City, parts in between, each typically drawing a few hundred people, less than the thousands that gathered in various protests that surged after it became clear that Trump had won Tuesday's election. Late Thursday night, Trump went on Twitter to take on the protesters. VOA correspondent Catherine Gibson has been looking at this. She's in the studio to talk about it. What's been the nature of the protests so far?
Well, we're seeing a lot of immigrant protesters and lesbian and gay rights protesters who are going out into the streets and saying that this Trump administration could be a very real problem for their concerns. They're concerned that their rights will be cut back on in a Donald Trump administration, and they feel that they're taking to the streets is the one way that they can speak out against that.
Speaking out against that, but is there any expectation that you have heard at all of anything to change anybody's mind whatsoever? I know that's asking you to speculate, which we're not allowed to do, but I'm doing it anyway.
Well, we can certainly talk a little bit about that. You know, one of the priorities that Donald Trump said would be the first in his new administration is immigration and addressing that border wall that was one of the key promises of his campaign. And that worries a lot of immigrant protesters.
The protest in Portland, Oregon, according to police last night, turned into a riot. What happened out there?
Right. So it turned into a riot once people started throwing projectiles. They said it got out of hand in Portland, and that's really what tipped the balance there. But that's the only one that's really tipped that balance and gone over into the edges of a riot.
Have the numbers been diminishing over the past few days?
They have. I was actually in Philadelphia on the first night of the protests, and there were a large group of hundreds of people in downtown Philadelphia. Now, in some of the other cities across the country last night, the protests were definitely smaller.
What have local officials been doing as far as handling these groups of people?
Well, you know, these are your typical protests that many major cities are used to seeing on a number of issues. So you're going to have police out in the streets. In some spots, they have used tear gas on some of the protesters. But all in all, this is what police are used to dealing with in major downtown cities.
And what about Trump going to Twitter again?
Well, that's been the most interesting part of all of this, Ira, is that we wondered whether Donald Trump would be on Twitter if he was elected, and now we're seeing that he is. He initially tweeted last night that these protests were, quote, very unfair. And he noted, quite rightly, that it was a very open presidential election. He was legally elected. And he said in a very interesting way that they were professional protesters incited by the mainstream news media. Now, about 9 hours later, Trump then again took to Twitter and kind of stepped back a little bit. He said that, you know, he was inspired by the passion of the protesters. It's a sign that we have a great country. And so it'll be really interesting to see that mix of, you know, what Donald Trump do we get in a Donald Trump administration? Do we get the very brash, open presidential candidate that we saw these past few months? Or do we get somebody who is a little bit more restrained? And that's the presidential candidate we had in the final weeks of the campaign.
And that is a question being asked not only by many in the population of the United States, but those around the world, including world leaders worldwide.
That's right. It'll be fascinating to see.
VOA correspondent Catherine Gibson, as always, thanks so much. Greatly appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Let's check in with Andrew Palshevsky now. You know Andrew. He's our social media guru. And what are people saying about all these protests, about Trump? I guess they're talking about it, eh?
They are, indeed. The Trump tweet that happened last night and then the one 9 hours later that Catherine was talking about, there's even questions saying, was that actually Donald Trump that tweeted that second tweet praising the protesters or at least praising the democracy? So
a quasi-tweeter?
There's question about how he's being reined in on social media, and it is going to be really fascinating to see how that develops as he goes into the presidency and how he's going to be maybe curtailed from using Twitter, or if he will be. Maybe he'll still be speaking his mind. But a lot of questions about that. A lot of focus on these Trump protests. And one thing that I found interesting is during the campaign, there was a lot of talk about the alt-right, the kind of ultra-conservative side of the Republican Party that a lot of people were fearful of and that were supporting Donald Trump. Well, a lot of people now from the Trump camp and Trump supporters are taking to Twitter with this Trump protest hashtag to talk about the alt-left. They're saying that the ultra-liberal side of the Democratic Party, the ultra-liberal Hillary Clinton supporters doing these protests, that they're more worrisome than anything on the alt-right. So it's kind of these fringes that are going back and forth on social media in light of these protests that are saying, well, no, this is much more radical than anything that our side would have done.
And now there are implications and hints and nothing proven so far, at least that I have seen. I don't know what you're seeing in social media, if anything, of people who are being called anarchists coming into these protests and driving them a little too far, according to police.
You know, you're seeing a lot of these really charged terms used on social media, referring to the alt-right, a lot of people using terms like fascist. You're seeing people refer to this so-called alt-left as anarchist with these protesters. It's just evidence, I think, that we have a lot of healing left to do in the country. And I will end with this because it is Veterans Day here in the United States. There was one tweet I was struck by. Somebody said, in a contentious week, remember those who fought for our freedom and that we're lucky to have it and be able to make these choices and live in this kind of democracy. So that is something to keep in mind, that as much as we are having these political back and forths, that we are lucky to live in a country where we're able to do so and express ourselves.
By all means, and also the fact that President Obama probably about 20 minutes ago wrapped up a whole speech at Arlington National Cemetery marking Veterans Day and honoring all of the veterans. Andrew Palchevsky, once again, people can get in touch with you by?
On Twitter, at APAL, APAL.
All right, and how about me? I always forget how to do that.
That's what I'm here for, at VOA Melman.
I knew there was a reason. Yeah, Andrew Palchevsky right here on International Edition. Among the top stories in the world, as we've been discussing, as Donald Trump begins his transition to the office of the U.S. president, thousands protest his election. Germany says all of the employees at its consulate in northern Afghanistan were unhurt and unaccounted for following an overnight Taliban suicide assault on the diplomatic facility. A fire that broke out in a suspected illegal garment factory on the outskirts of the Indian capital, New Delhi, killed at least 13 workers as they slept early Friday in the building. Iraqi troops inch ahead in their battle to retake the northern city of Mosul from the Islamic State group. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on the VOAnews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. I'm Ira Melman.
This is Science in a Minute.
The American Heart Association released a new study that uncovers yet another reason not to smoke. The study, published in the journal Circulation Cardiovascular Genetics, suggests that smoking can have a wide-ranging and long-term effect on our DNA. Research shows that smoking leaves a footprint on the human genome, a complete set of a person's genetic material, in a process called DNA methylation. A study author describes this as one of the mechanisms of the regulation of gene expression, which controls what genes are turned on. This process can play a role with a person's risk of developing smoke-related illnesses such as lung cancer and heart disease. While the research shows the DNA footprint greatly diminishes 5 years after a smoker quits, it doesn't completely disappear from the genome even after 30 years of quitting. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington, and I'm joined with Steve Herman, the senior diplomatic correspondent for VOA. And Steve, I want to talk a little bit about transition. Donald Trump yesterday met with President Obama at the White House. He said they did talk about some very difficult things that the new president will face. As it comes to foreign relations, how would you rate those? And how is the transition going and how will it go?
Well, the officials at State Department and Defense Department say there have been no contacts with the Trump transition team as of yet, but they are fully prepared and will totally cooperate with him. I don't think it's too surprising that nobody's showed up just a few days after the election, and probably next week there will be things will really get rolling on that. Definitely at the top of the list, if we're talking about problems that the new president will have to grapple with, and he will be getting information about this in his full top secret intelligence briefings, which are going to start now, is Syria. There is no doubt that is the most difficult one, not only because it's not a you know, A versus B. We have so many different elements involved in that. And then the United States and Russia also having different interests. The Russians, of course, want to keep Bashar al-Assad in power in Damascus. The United States would like him to go. And for the U.S., though, the priority is fighting Islamic State. And there are all sorts of complications. There's, as Secretary Kerry has said, there's actually five wars going on in Syria.
Secretary Kerry is probably in the most remote place on Earth right now. Is that correct?
Yes, he tried to get to the South Pole. He's in Antarctica as we speak. And I think this was intended to be to put him out of the limelight when his predecessor, Hillary Clinton, was elected as president on Tuesday, obviously.
Whoops.
With Donald Trump. And now you have the optics of the Secretary of State of the outgoing administration on his way to the South Pole, and he didn't even make it there. He'll be back in New Zealand, and then popping up, he'll be giving a critical speech in Marrakesh at the COP22 conference. I'll be there with him next week. And that was supposed to be a session about climate change where it's discussing implementation, not making the rules or negotiating anymore. But with the Trump administration and Donald Trump's statements in the past about basically not favoring these types of treaties, what Secretary Kerry says will be closely watched. And then he goes on to APEC. Now, that was supposed to be, again, with Hillary Clinton presumably coming in, there was hopes that she would change her tune on the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the TPP. Donald Trump has been vehemently opposed to that, and now we're expecting that Xi Jinping from Beijing will show up with his own Chinese trade pact proposal, putting China in the driver's seat rather than the United States in Asia-Pacific trade.
It almost sounds like openings have been created for other nations to step in internationally.
This is a huge earthquake, a seismic shift of historical proportions, and you are going to see the Chinese and the Russians maneuvering in a different direction. The joke is now that Angela Merkel becomes the leader of the free world, not the president of the United States. And she has had initial conversation on the telephone already with Donald Trump. The key is that people are going to want to meet Donald Trump and see in private one-on-one conversations whether he expresses the same sort of rhetoric that he did on the campaign trail.
Steve Herman is VOA's chief diplomatic correspondent, ready to hop on a plane to fly halfway around the world, which he does on a regular basis. And from what you just said, this is only the beginning, nowhere near the end.
It's going to be a fascinating end to this administration, that's for sure, Ira.
This is VOA.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's voanews.com. Online news for a changing world.
Hi there. there. This is Larry London, the host of Border Crossings. Nice to meet you. I would love for you to join us each and every day, Monday through Friday, on Border Crossings for requests, dedications, giveaways, and surprise guests. We've got some of today's biggest hitmakers coming into the studio to talk about their music. And all we're missing is you. So join us Monday to Friday, right here on Border Crossings. This is the Voice of America.
And this is International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Leonard Cohen, the gravelly-voiced singer and songwriter, has died. He was 82 years old. The cause of death was not immediately clear.
Now I've heard there was a secret chord that David played, and it pleased the Lord. But you don't really care for music, do you?
Cohen was best known for this song, Hallelujah, which has become a standard and is sung in a variety of settings, including reality shows, movies, weddings, TV shows, YouTube videos, funerals, and high school concerts. Other songs he wrote included Suzanne, Bird on a Wire, Hey, That's No Way to Say Goodbye, and So Long, Marianne. His most recent album, I Want It Darker, was released just last month. Cohen began performing the tunes he penned in the late 1960s. His distinctive baritone, which reached increasing depths as he aged, set him apart from other troubadours of the era, who also began recording his songs. Cohen was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2008 and received a Lifetime Achievement Award at the 2010 Grammys. He told an interviewer that he got into music because he couldn't make a living as a poet. He was a student at McGill University when his first book of poetry, Let Us Compare Mythologies, was published to good reviews. More books of poetry and novels followed. Over the years, thousands of recordings of his songs were made by a variety of artists, including Judy Collins, Roberta Flack, U2, Trisha Yearwood, and Elton John. This is International Edition, based on a true story. Loving, that's the name of the movie, offers an intimate portrait of Richard and Mildred Loving, a white man and a black woman who defied the miscegenation laws of their native Virginia in 1957 and got married in neighboring Washington, D.C. The events that unfolded changed America. VOA's Penelope Pulu spoke with a filmmaker and the lead actors in this dramatized landmark story.
I'm gonna build you a house right here, our house. Would you marry me?
Richard and Mildred get married in the nation's capital.
I now pronounce you husband and wife.
But their union is illegal under the Racial Integrity Act of Virginia, where they live.
In here?
Richard!
What you doing in bed with that woman?
I'm his wife.
They are arrested, accused, and found guilty.
Richard Perry Loving, being a white person, and Mildred Jeter, being a colored person, did unlawfully cohabitate as man and wife.
Richard?
The couple has to leave Virginia or face prison. In 1958, they moved to Washington, D.C., away from friends and family. 5 years later, in 1963, inspired by the civil rights movement, Mildred writes to U.S. Attorney General Robert F. Kennedy asking for help. She is then contacted by the Washington chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union.
I believe this is a court battle that could go all the way to the Supreme Court.
Filmmaker Jeff Nichols relied on historical footage and an in-depth documentary about the couple.
I can take care of you.
I know that.
But the film's power lies in the way Nichols portrays a nuanced, deep love between two people whose only desire is to live a life together. In 1967, the Supreme Court ruled in their favor. Loving versus Virginia became a landmark case that overturned miscegenation laws around the country. At the recently inaugurated African American Museum in Washington, D.C., Jeff Nichols spoke to VOA about the Oscar buzz his film has generated.
So it's flattering and humbling, but what's important here is the story we're trying to tell, Richard and Mildred's story. I didn't know about it in 2012 when I first heard about it, and that's shameful. This is a fundamental part of our American history.
You think you'll lose?
We may lose a small battle, but win the big war.
Actress Ruth Negga pours her heart into the character of Mildred. Her soulful performance has earned her acclaim. She told VOA what really inspired her to play the reluctant activist was her admiration for her character's immense courage.
How do we find out who we are, really? And usually it's when we're in peril or when we are forced to find out who we are. You know, and I think that's when our true colors show, and it's when we discover our grit and our integrity.
Asked if a film such as Loving could speak to wide audiences in America's current climate of political polarization, Joel Edgerton, who plays Richard Loving, told VOA.
We keep running into the same problems. They'll always be there. And so it's always good to have new stories and sometimes gentle stories that allow us to take a walk, an empathetic walk in someone else's shoes. And I think it's a very special film that will resonate.
Is there anything you'd like me to say to them? And by them, I mean the Supreme Court justices of the United States?
Tell the judge I love my wife.
Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
This is Veterans Day, where this country, the United States, honors its veterans. President Obama says a nation trying to unite after this week's elections can look to its service members for inspiration. Addressing an annual Veterans Day observance at Arlington National Cemetery, Obama said the U.S. military is the country's most diverse institution, comprised of immigrants and native-born Americans representing all religions and no religion. He says they are all forged into common service. That'll wrap it up for us today on International Edition. Find us at voanews.com, like us on Facebook, VOA Now, follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE. Thanks for joining us. Our thanks to Director Patrice Martin, our engineer, Mr. Chung. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Enjoy your day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States government, through the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, and the nonpartisan civic movement Participación Ciudadana, recently celebrated the 10th anniversary of the Community House of Justice program. This successful initiative began as a pilot project for the promotion and use of mediation and conciliation methods. These are regarded as important tools to increase access to justice, particularly for vulnerable populations. During the celebration, U.S. Ambassador James Brewster praised the hard work and commitment of Participación Ciudadana, the Attorney General's Office, the municipality, and civil society. The success of the program, the ambassador noted, allows access to justice in communities with high crime rates. Community justice houses establish a space where the judiciary, the public ministry, municipalities, and the business sector come together through the coordination of civil society. The pilot initiative has successfully been replicated. There are now 9 community justice houses in the Dominican Republic, in Santiago, Moca, San Francisco, La Vega, Esperanza, Mao, and the National District. The Community Justice House program has benefited more than 250,000 people through conflict resolution in family, labor, and community-related issues. These include such difficult issues as alimony, child custody, visitation rights, estate matters, boundary disputes, leases, and debts. The houses also help prevent violence in the communities because citizens have free access to services such as conciliation, mediation, legal counseling, psychological care, coordination with social organizations and civic education, and care for gender-based and domestic violence victims. Participación Ciudadana National Coordinator Josefina Arvelo said the program has been highly effective, and she advocated for more replication of the Community Justice House model to different parts of the country. For over 5 decades, USAID has collaborated closely with the people and government of the Dominican Republic. They have worked together to increase sustainable development and strengthen the country's health care, economy, governance, justice, civil society, and education. To date, USAID has invested more than $1.7 billion in the Dominican Republic. This is very much a partnership that works well for both the United States and the Dominican Republic, as well as for the region.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.